The United States Department of Agriculture, or USDA, has been publishing nutritional guidelines for well over 100 years now. These recommendations have been updated over time, and logically, one would think that they've changed to reflect new knowledge gained about nutritional science. Unfortunately, nothing could be further from the truth. Early changes reflected what foods were available rather than what foods were best. This lack of scientific rigor continued, and the eventual food pyramid that influenced the eating habits of generations was the end result of bad science, deals with the Soviets, and corporate influence. This resulted in the USDA releasing dietary guidelines that coincided with a dramatic increase in American obesity and heart disease. Although the scientists who criticized the food pyramid did not want to outright claim this correlation equaled causation, there is certainly a lot of evidence that this was the case. So, what were the original guidelines, and how did they morph into the unhealthy abomination that was the food pyramid? The first USDA nutritional guidelines were published in 1894, and they were pretty basic. The guidelines advocated for eating a varied diet, as well as for eating in moderation and counting calories. They also recommended focusing on foods that were known to be nutrient-rich and on avoiding foods that were high in fat, sugar, and starch. Basically, the recommendation was to eat a bunch of different things to get all of your nutrients, with the majority of your calories coming from protein. Especially for the time, this was a pretty reasonable guideline to set. Individual vitamins wouldn't be discovered for another 15 years, so the idea of focusing on variety while minimizing fats and sugars was a good baseline given the limited understanding. Some advancements to the guidelines were made over the coming decades, such as categorizing foods into 5 food groups and creating recommended daily allowances for specific vitamins, minerals, and overall calories. 4 new guidelines were created during the Great Depression, with each guide being for a different income bracket. Needless to say, these guides were focusing on what was possible for people to afford while avoiding malnutrition, rather than trying to optimize for the healthiest diet possible. The next big update came in 1943, when the USDA released its Nutritional Guide for the Basic 7 Food Groups. It was World War II, so the definitions of the food groups were heavily influenced by what was available as a result of wartime rationing. 3 of the 7 food groups were different types of fruits and vegetables, with the other 4 types of groups being dairy, meat, breads, and butter or margarine. There was no specific guidance on how much of each food group a person should consume each day. The guidelines just said to eat some food from each group every day. It went on to say people should eat whatever they want in addition to those food groups. While the emphasis on variety was a nice way to prevent vitamin deficiency, these new guidelines really weren't any more helpful than the original ones created in 1894. Many people found it overly confusing, as there were 3 separate groups for different types of fruits and vegetables, and the graphics seemed to implicitly suggest that a person should eat as much butter as they do meat. To simplify things, in 1956, the USDA released its new guidelines, recommending the 4 basic food groups. These were the types of foods people were supposed to eat every day, and they were milk, meat, fruits and vegetables, and breads and cereals. There was also a category called other foods that could be used to round out meals. This included things like butter and cooking oils, and their classification of other foods made it more obvious that these should not be consumed in the same quantities as items from the basic 4 food groups. However, there is something that is worth pointing out before we continue, as the recommendation persists in USDA guidelines to this day. Milk and dairy were labeled as one of the 4 basic food groups, but people don't actually need to consume dairy products to have a healthy diet. By default, all adult mammals, including humans, are lactose intolerant. Biologically speaking, mammals were designed to stop consuming milk after weaning. Humans who've lived in areas where dairy farming was prominent evolved lactose persistence, the ability to continue to consume milk as adults, but large populations across the globe have gone without consuming dairy for thousands of years. There is a more appropriate name for this food group, which we will get into later. Regardless, the basic 4 became the standard dietary guidance for decades, but there was still one problem. People knew what foods to eat, but not how much of each food group was required. Clarification was necessary, and this gave way to the concept of a food pyramid. By structuring a diagram in this way, it provided an easy visual representation for how much of each type of food a person was supposed to consume, especially relative to the other food groups. The first food pyramid was developed in Sweden in the 1970s, and this served as a basic blueprint for the USDA's eventual food pyramid. But before we can get to that, President Eisenhower needs to have a heart attack. In the early 20th century, and for most of human history, heart attacks were relatively rare. The largest cause of death was infectious disease. But as medical science advanced, deaths by infectious disease decreased. At the same time that this happened, cars and automation resulted in people living more sedentary lifestyles, and the percentage of the population that smoked tobacco products skyrocketed. As a result, heart disease became much more common, and by the mid-20th century, it was the leading cause of death in the United States. Heart health became a growing concern when President Eisenhower suffered a heart attack in 1955 while playing golf, and America became fixated on trying to prevent heart disease. However, the science behind the recommendations that followed wasn't particularly sound. The earliest research on the matter had been conducted by Russian pathologist Nikolai Anishkov in 1913. By feeding rabbits lard and pure cholesterol, he noticed that they quickly developed arteriosclerosis. Rabbits were chosen because the way they metabolize cholesterol is much more similar to how humans do than other common lab animals like mice. However, there is still a very obvious problem with choosing rabbits. Even though their bodies handle cholesterol in a similar way to ours, they also aren't equipped to handle cholesterol in any meaningful quantity. Rabbits are strictly herbivores, and plants contain very little cholesterol. Not only that, but the way plaque builds up and causes arteriosclerosis only somewhat resembles how it happens in humans. That doesn't mean that Anishkov's findings were meaningless, but they still left a lot to be desired when it came to being a human analog. But Ansel Keys disagreed. Keys was an American physiologist who was at the forefront of research into diet and health. Using the previous study as the basis for his diet heart hypothesis, Keys presented his findings at a meeting of the World Health Organization in Geneva in 1955. He believed that saturated fat was the cause of heart disease, and he even presented a handy graph showing the rate of heart disease compared to the percent of calories consumed as fat across six countries. The two metrics were clearly correlated, providing strong evidence for his hypothesis. However, some of his contemporaries found the data to be disingenuous. While Keys had used data for six countries to make his graph, there was actually data from 22 countries available. When all of that data was included, the data points were completely scattered and there was no obvious correlation at all. But Keys had a theory. So the following year, he began his seven-country study, a multinational study designed to examine the relationships between diet, lifestyle, and heart disease. Now, many argued that Keyes cherry-picked countries to fit his theory, as he had done with his previous presentation, and Keyes had a reputation for bullying his critics into silence, so these opposing viewpoints were not as widespread as they perhaps should have been. But whether or not they were heavily biased by Keyes' own beliefs, the findings of the seven-country study were clear. Saturated fat was the leading cause of heart disease. The study did note some other factors, such as sedentary lifestyles and smoking being contributing factors, but saturated fat was believed to be by far the biggest factor, and sugar was completely ignored as even a possibility. Of course, it's worth mentioning that while Eisenhower had quit smoking a few years before his heart attack, he had been a four-pack-a-day man. The importance of that was largely overlooked, and so the alleged dangers of saturated fat were overemphasized, in no small part by the American Heart Association and their conflict of interest. The AHA was once a small organization until it became sponsored by Procter & Gamble, who in 1948 donated $1.7 million, that's over $22 million today, to the organization. This influx of cash allowed the AHA to grow and gain national recognition. However, P&G were the makers of Crisco, an incredibly popular brand of vegetable oil. Since Keyes and his seven-country study were advocating for replacing saturated fats with polyunsaturated fats like those found in vegetable oils, the AHA had every incentive to sign off on his research. However, there was one dissenting bit of research, much of which didn't see the light of day until 2016. While most studies into diet and lifestyle required self-reporting of data, which was not always reliable and which couldn't be controlled, from 1968 to 1973, there was a large controlled study of nearly 10,000 people living in nursing homes and mental hospitals. Because these people had their meals provided for them, researchers could control exactly what they ate. This was known as the Minnesota Coronary Study, and it has been reported that Keyes was one of the principal investigators in the study, though his name was not published on the final report. When the report was finally published in 1989, it showed that replacing saturated fats with polyunsaturated did not reduce the risk of heart disease. However, only a very limited data set was released. The authors of the paper were disappointed with the results, so perhaps they published as little data as possible in an attempt to undermine their own study's credibility. But In 2016, Dr. Christopher Ramsden contacted the son of one of the paper's authors to see if he could find the original research. Hidden away, in the basement, were 60,000 records showing that not only was saturated fat not harmful, but that replacing it with vegetable oil, while it did lower cholesterol, also increased the risk of heart disease. Of course, there are some unanswered questions relating to this study, such as other possible factors present in the various test groups. None of this was known at the time, though, and as far as America was concerned, saturated fat was now public enemy number one. Meat was the largest part of most people's diets, and meat and dairy were both high in saturated fat. So, aside from using vegetable oil for cooking instead of butter and lard, what were people supposed to eat in place of all those fatty foods? Well, the Seven Countries study was first published in 1978, and by then, there was an easy answer to that question thanks to maneuvers made by President Nixon to guarantee a second term. For over 50 years, the price of grain had been controlled by the government. This was meant to keep grain prices higher to keep America's farmers secure, but there were also limits on how much grain they were able to produce. For a while, this worked. But as inflation rose, without the price of grain being adjusted accordingly, it began causing unrest among farmers who were no longer convinced that the government controls were actually working. Winning over America's farmers would all but guarantee Nixon's re-election in 1972, so two major decisions were made to garner their support. First, the regulations on the grain industry were removed. Farmers could grow as much grain as they wanted, and the market, rather than the government, would decide the price of grain. As an added bonus, Nixon also agreed to sell $750 million worth of grain to the Soviet Union, who were in the midst of a food shortage due to a particularly poor growing season. This meant that farmers had a guaranteed way to move their grain at a guaranteed price. Nixon easily won re-election, taking 49 of the 50 states, but the sweet deal the grain industry had just made was quickly collapsed in on itself. The deal with the Soviet Union was supposed to last for 3 years, but the food shortage had been so bad that they blew through their entire $750 million balance in just 1 month. But it was only ever going to be a temporary deal anyway, and the world did not experience the same poor growing season the following year. So, what was the grain industry to do? They had a record production and no way to dump their product. But as these massive surpluses of grains were piling up, the USDA created an opportunity for the grain industry to address this problem. Research into constructing the USDA's food pyramid began in the 1980s. It was created by a team of scientists and nutritionists led by Louise Light, and they carefully reviewed all the available data and research on nutrient recommendations, disease prevention, documented dietary shortfalls, and major health problems of the population. The goal of Light and her team was to create the best possible dietary recommendations to address the needs of the average American, and by 1991, they had completed their mission. However, the food pyramid designed by Light and her team looked absolutely nothing like the food pyramid that we're all familiar with. The base was made up of 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables. The next step on the pyramid was 5 to 8 ounces of protein foods. While many people equate protein with meat and fish, people can also get protein from beans, lentils, tofu, and other sources, and the language was chosen to clarify that meat was not necessarily required in a healthy diet. The next step on the pyramid called for 2 to 5 servings of grains, but specifically whole grains. Above that was 2 to 3 servings of calcium foods. Just like equating protein with meat, we are likely to equate calcium with dairy. However, there are plenty of non-dairy sources of calcium, such as broccoli and almonds. Above calcium foods were fats, with a recommended daily intake of 2 to 3 tablespoons. There was no specific recommendation in favor or against specific types of fat, just the acknowledgement that fat is an important part of our diet. And then, on top of the pyramid, was clean water, with a recommended 6 to 8 glasses per day. Note that the food pyramid is designed to inform where we get our calories from, which is why water was at the top of the pyramid despite having the highest recommended volume of consumption. This was a sensible set of regulations put together by a team of the USDA's most accomplished nutritionists based on the best science available. It was then passed up the chain to the USDA's most accomplished bureaucrats and the Secretary of Agriculture, and the end result, the food pyramid we're all familiar with, was wildly different from what had originally been recommended. Lobbyists were quick to make their presence known, and immediately corporate interests got to work rewriting the pyramid from the ground up. Protein foods and calcium foods were replaced with meat and dairy. Language was changed to downplay the importance of fresh and whole foods, instead emphasizing heavily processed foods. And most notably, grains were moved to the bottom of the pyramid with a recommended 6 to 11 servings each day. According to Light, our nutritional needs were sold to the highest bidder, with the resulting guidelines being informed by corporate interests and bad science. And while scientists have been cautious about confusing correlation with causation, the effects of this food pyramid are seemingly pretty damn clear. Though American obesity has been on the rise since the 1960s, the 1990s and the release of the USDA's food pyramid saw a sharp increase in obesity, particularly childhood obesity. But hey, at least the US no longer has such an unwieldy surplus of grain. So everything worked out for the best. In June of 2011, after 19 long years, the USA finally retired the food pyramid and replaced it with My Plate. The new image simply shows a plate divided into four sections: vegetables, fruit, grains, and protein, as well as a glass labeled dairy off to the side. This was considered a large improvement, especially because the recommendation was for fruits and vegetables to make up 50% of a person's plate. However, there are still problems. Unlike in the food pyramid, there are no example foods for each group, nor is it clear exactly how big a person's plate is supposed to be. There are also criticisms that dairy is still portrayed as a mandatory food group. Of course, the My Plate image is just the most surface-level explanation of the USDA's guidelines. If you want to see the complete dietary guidelines for Americans for 2020 to 2025, you can download the full 164-page PDF file off their website. But ain't nobody got time for that. And that was perhaps the most powerful element of the food pyramid. The food pyramid was simple, concise, and easy to understand. The guidelines in the food pyramid were easy to follow, even if those guidelines were controlled by lobbyists and bad science rather than the nutritionists in the USDA. Unfortunately, because the food pyramid was so easy to follow, millions of Americans are now paying the price for following that advice and for believing that the government was actually looking out for them rather than for American corporate interests.